Hey, y'all. My name is Ann Wyatt. I started my career in workforce development with the state of Kentucky in 2010. That experience ignited a deep passion for manufacturing within me. I started this show hoping to raise more awareness around the bright outlook manufacturing careers have. Join me as I sit down with some of the manufacturing industry's most successful change makers and learn how they're partnering people with technology. It's time to give people more meaningful work. This is Workforce 4.0. Hey, y'all. Welcome back to another episode of Workforce 4.0. I'm super excited to have Travis Miller from Miller Resource Group on with us today. Travis, it is so great to have you come on the show today. I'm really looking forward into your insights into workforce development and recruiting. I know what you guys, I've been following what you all do with Travis or with Miller Resource Group for a while now, and you are really getting the word out there in a positive way about recruiting and manufacturing and also workforce development, because that kind of feeds into that, right? And love how passionate you all there at Miller Resource Group. Love the passion behind your mission. Can't wait to hear more. But for those listening today, do you maybe want to give a brief introduction of yourself?
Sure. So Travis Miller, I've been president over here at Miller Resource Group. You know, we're a 54-year-old executive search firm that specializes in industrial technology, manufacturing, robotics, automation. And I'm second generation, family run business. So back 35 years ago, I'd come in Saturday mornings and Gary's putting his plan together for a week. And I don't know how much of your audience is recruiters, but like the big old paper book planner writing down his calls and pick up McDonald's breakfast. And I'm screwing around with the chipboard and messing with the coffee machine. You got the big old
thing. Oh yeah.
And I was never going to do this, you know, like any self-respecting 19-year-old, I'm never going to do what my parents do. I don't want to be anything like them. And I have a background and degree in broadcast journalism, and out of college landed my dream job working for one of the tentpole radio stations here in the Chicagoland area, and couldn't have been more excited to get that job after graduating for about a month and a half. And then I just kind of like, I think I made a terrible mistake. It wasn't just that one company, but from talking to the veterans of the industry, to talking to other people around recent graduates working in the industry, like, this is not what I signed up for. I got into journalism because I loved talking to people. I loved hearing stories, where you've been, where you're going, how you want to get there. And That wasn't it. It was about getting 10-second sound bites about the kid that just got shot down the street. And I kind of remember the moment. This was about 15 years ago. You remember there was a trainer at SeaWorld that was killed during a performance?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Day after that happened, my boss called me into his office, said, lays the story out in front of me. You see this? I said, yeah, I saw it. He goes, call the family up, get a quote. And just the sentimentality of that just killed me inside. And so I'm totally disillusioned with my career, what I'm going to do. I've just spent years getting this degree, this certification. What else am I going to do? And Gary, the owner, my father,
yeah,
kind of sees what I'm going through. And he's like, I got my President's Club trip coming up to Mexico in about a month. Your mom, she just doesn't want to go to, she's not in the mood to go to Cabo this year. You look like you could use a vacation. And I said, free trip to Mexico, I'll take it. And so I spent a week with 400 of the most successful recruiters on the planet. And it was pretty great. And I was talking to Cindy Linus, legend of the industry, from a former owner of Managed Recruiters Cedar Rapids, now the Harrison Group. And we're sitting on the beach and I said, Cindy, you know, I've known Gary a long time. And I know what I think he does, but what do you do? What does a recruiter really do? And she says, she's got this kind of accent. She says, Trav, I just talk to people. I just hear their stories, ask them where they've been, Where are they going? How are they going to get there? And it's just an epiphany that that was exactly why I got into that in the first place. And so by the end of that trip, I had an offer to go and interview with Cindy's office. I had an offer to interview with a firm up in Milwaukee, an offer to interview with MRI Corporate. And on the plane ride home, Gary says, if this is something you're actually considering, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you to come and interview with my company as well. And I worked on a couple of those other ones. And he put me through the ringer. I mean, I'm doing role plays. I'm doing situational interviews. Had to do the DISC assessment and everything.
Oh, but yeah.
That was 14 and a half years ago now. And working with him to build this thing up into a recruiting firm that can make the industry proud by doing this the right way and doing the best work possible for the companies and candidates that are counting on us.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. I love that so much. I love good recruiting conferences like that. Yeah. I haven't been to one in a couple of years, but that they're always a lot of fun. And it's like so cool to be around other recruiters and kind of share their challenges that they go through. You know what
I mean? Yeah. When I talk to the leadership of MRI Network, they always say, well, what can we do for you? What's the most valuable thing that MRI Network can do for you? I just tell them it's the network. It's getting together with other people that are running great firms and learning together and sharing together and being a part of a larger community. And I think in any industry, like being in manufacturing and technology, going to the A3 conference, going to mm-hmm. CSIA, those conferences, being with your peers and partners and companies that are working with us and we're working with them. I just think those events are wildly invaluable.
They are, because you learn so much. Like if it had not been for my network of recruiters, I don't think that I would be nearly as good, you know what I mean? As what I am, because you just learn all different aspects of the business. You learn, you talk to people, they tell you things. You know, I'm sure that when you started out, you kind of had the same experience where you had like some moms, you know what I mean? Some moms, mm-hmm. some dads that weren't Gary, that were like, let me tell you something, son, you know,
yep.
This is how many calls you need to be making a day. This is how you go to the library and you research, you know, mm-hmm. the old school way of how to find
how many sides
you got and candidates. Today. Yep. I mean, they're not wrong. So learning all of that stuff was really invaluable to me in my career as well. I just love that. And I think it's really interesting because, yeah, journalism, that's a big part of, that's exactly what recruiting is, right? You find out like where people have come from and where they're going.
Oh, yeah. I was a couple years ago, I was hanging out downtown Oak Park and I ran into an old teacher of mine and I loved this teacher. And I think he was a big fan of me. And this was 4 or 5 years after I graduated. He said, so what are you doing these days? And I said, I'm actually working in a recruiting firm. And he looked so disappointed. He's like, well, not really much cause for a journalism degree in that industry, is there? And I kind of made small talk for a minute, but I remember walking away and feeling really disappointed. But then I thought about it more, and so many of the skills that I learned in journalism are incredibly applicable to this industry. The ability to dig into a person, the ability to understand what makes a person tick, to uncover their story, not only in the past, but to try and vision their story in the future and make those connections is a terribly important skill in this business, to be able to.
That is really the top skill, I think.
It's up there. And that's why I spend so much of my time doing. Plus, now I've got a podcast, which is basically radio journalism. it's replacing radio journalism.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So cool. And your passion again for the industry and recruiting just really shines through. I really want to get more into the conversation, but you know, I've got to bring it up. But Travis, like if we're out somewhere and we're at a karaoke event, you know, what's your go-to karaoke song?
I wish I had a much cooler answer. Like my wife, tiny little white girl, and she gets up there and she can do a flawless version of Gin and Juice.
It's nice.
Wild.
Nice.
But me, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Back to the Future. Much so that at one point I threatened to run away because my mother wouldn't let me change my name to Michael J. Fox Miller. I wanted that to be my full name. I wanted my first name to be Michael. I wanted my middle name to be J. Fox and my last name to be Miller. And so I do a pretty wild rendition of Johnny B. Goode.
Nice.
And nice. 4 years ago, I was out. Speaking of the importance of these events, I was down in Florida at an MRI conference, and we all went out and did live band karaoke. And to be in front of like 300-400 people doing Johnny B. Goode on stage with full band behind me. They had horn sections, backup That's singers, cool. backup dancers. It was pretty wild.
That is so cool. I love that. I feel like, first of all, I feel like karaoke events are standard at all recruiting conferences. It is just a thing. Yeah. Secondly, I love Chuck Berry. Do you love Chuck Berry? Obviously.
I love Chuck Berry.
You know, I think a lot of the younger generations out there are missing out on some Chuck Berry. I don't think that they're as familiar with Chuck Berry.
I agree. And the older I get, it's the one part of Back to the Future that I'm disappointed with is mythologizing that rock and roll was not created by Chuck Berry, but by white 5'6" Marty McFly.
Uh-huh.
And I have a bit of a problem with that because Chuck Berry is a god. Godfather of rock.
He is. He is. Oh my gosh. I share that sentiment. That's wild. Like I've thought that for a long time. I'm like, you know, it's just one of those things, right? You're like, you turn on like Johnny B. Goode or Automobile and you're just like, how do we not embrace this more? Like, why is this man like not like, there should be statues of Chuck Berry. I'm serious.
I bet there's some.
I feel like we could have been a little bit more proactive about getting the word spread about Chuck Berry to these younger generations. And you know, I think that kind of an interesting parallel between manufacturing, right? Because back when Chuck Berry was shredding on stage, the manufacturing industry was lit, right? It was like the place to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, just a wildly different time. I mean, you think back to the late 50s, early 60s, and I think the world of work was so different. I mean, that was the time period when you got a job and you were in that job for life. I mean, that was,
yep.
I mean, my grandfathers both had like post World War II. One worked was a delivery driver for Wonder Bread for 50 years. And
that was like a job. That was like a career.
Mm-hmm. It was until he ended up going blind in one eye and couldn't drive anymore. And then he retired. And my other grandfather was a maintenance engineer for Johnson & Johnson for 50 years until he retired. My parents said that one of the greatest fringe benefits ever in existence was because he was in management at Johnson & Johnson. When I was born, they got free diapers.
Nice. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
I'm not blaming anyone. And it's a different shift, but very few people stay at an organization for more than 3 to 5 years. I mean, some do, and you get lucky, and it's on companies' shoulders to create environments where people want to stay. There's a reason for them to stay, but it doesn't happen as often. Plus, the workforce is shrinking with so many people. We stopped making babies at the same rate as we did 30, 40 years ago, and now it's showing, and the workforce is shrinking. So people aren't staying as long. There's less people in the workforce, so it's very different than it was. It's the difference between Chuck Berry and Dua Lipa.
Yep. I mean, wildly different, right? Yeah, I brought that up on a different podcast the other day. That's so funny that you said that, that we stopped making babies. Like, we literally, if you look at the numbers, that's something that I say all the time, like in the workforce, there's just not enough people, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a population issue. It is the biggest resource issue that we have, right? So I think that's really cool that you also recognize that, and you're just embracing the truth of the data for what it is. How do you think that with the people that we do have, how do you think we can get more interested in manufacturing, especially like the younger generations, right? We're talking about kind of bridging the gap between Chuck Berry and Dua Lipa.
It's a great topic. And I was just talking to Kathy Rinney over and her team over at Flexline Automation about this, that we need to figure out a way to rebrand the industry. I was talking to two of their newest employees, I mean, intern level, been there less than a month. And Isaiah, anybody who's listening, Isaiah is their summer marketing intern. He's a marketing intern in a manufacturing industry, and he's got 25 LinkedIn connections. So go find Isaiah at Flexline Automation and connect with him. Let's help this young man out. But he was saying before he joined them, he had this idea that I want to go work for a manufacturing company. I mean, it's going to be all dirty and sweaty and gross. And I really want an internship before I start college, so I'll go talk to him, but I don't think I'm going to like it. And there's this, I think the general idea for people not involved in the industry, that manufacturing is dirty, messy, sweaty, smelly, or it's going to destroy the world. Robotics is going to destroy the world. They picture, iRobot.
iRobot. World of Warcraft.
Neither of those are the case. I mean, there's so much cool technology in manufacturing to make the world a better place. But no, if you're not already in it, I don't think many people have that mindset. So there needs to be a rebrand to try and educate that there is a lot of cool stuff to do in manufacturing, in industrial tech, and you don't need to be this stodgy engineer that has spent his entire life playing with Tinker toys and getting engineering degrees. And it really is my philosophy, and I see them embracing that over there, is to hire what you can't train. I mean, how much of what you need for somebody to be successful in your organization can you teach in 3 to 6 months? Now, I get it. There are a lot of jobs that do require a very specific skill set, training, and background in order to be barely competent at the job. But a lot of times that's the conversation that I try to have and we try to have with our customers, is we try to figure out what are the bare minimum qualifications, skills, and experiences that somebody would have in order to barely be successful at the job. So that
right. You
can identify all of those people and above. I mean, you want, but then you can talk to as many people as possible so you can figure out, well, here are all of the skills that I can teach, but I can't teach somebody's ability to be a good person. I can't teach somebody's ability to be curious. I can't teach somebody the ability to want to learn, to want to get better. We can teach questions to ask. We can give them materials to help them learn, to help them get better, but we can't make them want it. And I think if there are a lot of companies that are doing this well, that are doing this great, and I applaud all those organizations, but still a lot of organizations are, well, we need 10 years of experience in this specific program. We need to do three in this specific field. We need them to have sold or engineered this specific product, whereas, well, maybe they got a couple years less experience. Maybe they haven't worked with your exact product. Maybe they don't have a degree, but they've been building car engines since they were five, and they've been playing with industrial toys their entire lives, but they just didn't have the finance or wherewithal to go and get an actual degree. Well, how much could you teach in a person's first 3 months, in their first 6 months? And they could be wildly successful after that versus somebody that has done the exact job that you're hiring for, and you're able to entice them to your company with a little bit more money, a little bit more flexibility, a little bit better work-life balance. And that person, in all likelihood, in 3 to 5 years, is going to change to another organization for a little bit more money, a little bit better work-life balance, a little bit more flexibility, versus right. the person that you take a chance on, that they're in it, man, because you brought them to this.
Yeah, you were the person that got them excited mm-hmm. about this as an option. You know, I think it's really interesting how far manufacturing career paths have come. I mean, when I was coming up, I didn't even know that marketing was a career path in manufacturing. And I don't think that there was probably a huge space for that.
Which is wild to think about. Nobody, you're right. People don't think about sales, marketing, human resources, operations in manufacturing. And so they don't think about it as a possible career path for them when, you know, in sales or marketing, can you teach somebody enough about your product or the industry in 3 to 6 months? And they could be wildly successful. And then you can focus on hiring the best marketer, the best salesperson possible, versus if you really, really, really need somebody to have very specific experience in your industry, well, then you can only hire the best possible person that has that exact knowledge, versus
right.
making the pool that you're fishing in as big as an ocean.
Right. Which is really like what you want if you're a hiring company, you know, yeah. I would
the
think
more people you could consider for a job, the more ability you have to hire the best possible person, not just the best possible resume.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I think, you know, I think we've come a long way in the industry as far as like showcasing, like what we do is cool, right? Showcasing that there's more career paths than just, you know, being an operator for the rest of your life or working in maintenance for the rest of your life. You know,
yeah, there's yeah, but I think we're
potential there.
I think we're also kind of, how do we expand out of our industry? Because I think we've kind of developed our own little echo chamber here in manufacturing, like you, Chris Lukey,
yeah,
Jay Call, Will Healy, all these guys, these voices that are prominent in
we're making it so. But I don't. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you get out and you still talk to people, and it's like.
Yeah, and how do you expand it out? Like, I think of at Automate this year. Who was it who had the drum set with the robotic arms?
Doosan.
Doosan. It was such cool,
cool
stuff. But does anybody that's not already intimately aware of what was happening at Automate see that? How do you get that out to to kids like Isaiah? 25 connections on LinkedIn. Barely even thought of the manufacturing industry. How do you get them to see that? How do you get them to understand, well, that stuff's really, really cool. Plus, I'm about to start school in business administration. I want to get into sales and marketing. Not only is that stuff cool, but there's a place for me.
And that's something I think that we have to really like also educate the parents on as well. Because I look at Automate and I'm just like, all right, so Phoenix can come here. You know, he's 7. So, I mean, I'm already counting down 5 more years. And, I mean, I'm taking him. I'm, like, dragging him up there because I think, like, he will have such a great experience. He loves that kind of stuff. I'm always taking him videos. I'm always, like, sending him stuff like this. I let him play. I've got a couple of UR robots. I let him play with those. I let him, like, build Legos. We're huge on Legos. I'm constantly, like, hounding the school, like, okay, when can he start first? You know, like I know you have a first program.
Got my Lego typewriter right here.
I love that. Oh my God. So cute. That is so cool. I love all that. That is so cool. Now, I'm not very good at it. Now, Phoenix is very good at it. But I'm not like very good at like the small, you know.
Well,
like,
I'm impressed with my stuff together. My son, he's 6 years old, and I can buy a Lego set like this, and I can build the cool stuff with instructions. But he's just got this giant bin of Lego, and
the
wild cars and planes and animals that he builds just out of his imagination. That's the stuff that I'm blown away by.
Oh my gosh, he's like a little designer. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. See, I mean, really, like, I feel like we're cheating though, in a way, with our kids, because we look at that and we're like, it's product design right there. You know what I mean? Yep. You're able to like mentally just transpose that skill set and see.
But I just had an idea on what we could do with this. I'm having this on the fly. So you can tell me if this is a dumb idea. This is like the words of Brené Brown training. This is my shitty first draft. Pardon my language if that's not acceptable on your podcast. But
it's okay.
So my kids are at daycare summer camp right now. And they do field trips and bring in guests and stuff so that the teachers don't have to entertain them all day, every single day. And they had a reptile guy come in last week.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew this guy was coming in. I thought it was going to be cool. I figured he'd have a couple lizards, a couple little snakes, maybe a spider or two. No, man. This dude brought in like boa constrictor the size of this room. He's got snakes sitting on my kid's head. There's like a Gila monster type thing like this big. And it was wild. And I'm like, not that my kid didn't like bugs and snakes beforehand, but he's like, this is
Oh, yeah.
We need to start super early. Like, we need traveling robot shows to go into daycares and grade schools and be like, look at this cool stuff and let them play with it. Let them
figure
out how to make it work. Let them touch it and be a part of it. Let them use, I don't know how you make cobots safe for six-year-olds to use, but you got to figure out a way for them. They come home from school and they say, Dad, you're not going to believe what we got to do today. I want to learn more about this.
I literally do not think, okay, I think like if in demo mode, I promise you, I would let my six-year-old mess with the UR cobot. Like, yeah. I'm not kidding. I mean, there is like nothing, you know, I do not think that there's much that can, in demo mode, where it's going like super slow and all that. I mean, we'd have to have a conversation about don't push hands and fingers and joints, right? But really and truly, I mean, how, like, I feel like we're kind of being a little too much. Like, oh, this isn't safe. Is it not? Is it really not?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
We need, so let's look at the reptiles. So is there the possibility that this boa constrictor is going to wrap himself around my five-year-old? I guess, but you have a trained and you have a trained handler right there that knows they've been with this reptile probably since its birth. They've trained this reptile what to do and what not to do. They know what danger signs to look for. Are you
telling me? And they probably fed it, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So this is, and maybe this is, here's where what the problem is if you have, we live in a capital society. How do you create a business model where it makes sense? But if you had an engineer who has built these robots, they know the safety functions, they know what the actions a person could even start to take to make it dangerous. Can you design it so that it is safe for five-year-olds, six-year-olds, seven-year-olds to be around and to play with? It becomes expensive. But is the investment in the future of the industry worth it? I mean, this is something that you are investing in for the future.
Yeah. I mean, we know. I mean, right. I mean, it's like every parent goes to the store and we're like, all right, we're going to buy this toy, you know, and this is the last, we bring it home and we unbox it. And we're like, this is the last time I'm ever going to see this toy, this perfect condition. I mean, it just is what it is, right?
Oh, I get in a fight every holiday with my mom and my mother-in-law where it's like, please don't buy them 20 things from the dollar store.
There's yeah, because
they're gonna end up in the trash. You're going to end up buried in the bottom of the toy box.
Yep.
It's just, same thing. How can we it's investing in the future.
But I do think that it's worth it. And I mean, I get that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just a capitalist society mindset, but I mean, somebody's got to do it because mm-hmm. I really think that we're kind of under a time crunch in manufacturing and we've got to be super competitive with our talent. We've got to be super protective of the talent that we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a recruiter, I think a big part of our skill set and our job is to create urgency, right? And this is probably something that we don't talk a whole lot about on this show. So I don't really think my audience, you know, unless you're in sales at some degree, probably has a good grasp of, but creating a sense of urgency, as you know, is really critical to make the placement. And you want to kind of drive that urgency with the client if you're noticing that they're just kind of taking a long time to get back on candidate submittals or what have you. You want to drive that sense of urgency with the candidate if, you know, they're kind of like taking a long time to think about, you know, do I really want to apply for this job? Are they taking a while to get back with you for a phone screen or to submit your resume or whatever? There's always this aspect of driving a sense of urgency. You know, how do we take that skill set and what we do and make it applicable to these manufacturing companies that are out there that maybe they're just, you know, like, well, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. You know, some people you're never going to change and there's nothing you can do about it. But others, I think you can move the needle a little bit. I mean, to make people help people understand that if you drag your feet on this, and this is on both sides, that's probably worse on the hiring side. Still this mentality that, and I think people, a lot of people leading, even most of the best, have an unconscious bias that people should be grateful for the opportunity to come and work for me, to come and work. Mm-hmm. And people got options.
They got a lot of options.
People got a lot of options. And I know it's not the wild candidate market that it was in 21 and 22, but people still got options. And
they have plenty of options.
And companies need to ask themselves, this person that I'm interviewing, if I were disappointed if I made them an offer and they took an offer to go and work somewhere else, then you need to move as quickly as possible because they are going to take an offer somewhere else. I fell into the trap of doing it almost to the opposite extent recently, where there was a candidate that we wanted to come work for us and we liked him quite a bit. And I knew that he was interviewing other places and I knew that he was talking to another company that he was getting pretty close to final stages with. And I said, I want you to go and take that other interview. And after that interview, if you come back and you want me to make you an offer, I will, but I want you to make the best possible decision for yourself. He took the other opportunity and I was disappointed. If I had worked really, really hard and said, nah, I know you got this other thing coming, but I want you. And I want you now. And I'm going to make you the best possible offer that I can right now.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to go on that other interview. What would have been the reaction? Is that too much? Is there a happy medium of my urgency, my desire for them to come and work here with us at Miller Resource Group versus what... I don't know. I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I don't even really know what I'm trying to say, but if I wanted him bad enough, if I was confident that this was a great opportunity for him, that I could make this, he could be wildly successful here, should I have worked harder to impress that upon him and wooed him off his feet versus saying, I'm here if you want me, come back whenever you're ready?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that there's like, I get all fired up about this because I agree. I mean, companies just have this whole mentality. It's like about them. It's like, you're welcome, you know? And it's kind of like, listen, you're welcome. Like, we're just to the point, like, you're welcome. You don't understand. You know what I mean? And I think that we really have to change that mindset and build that candidate experience in such a way that they know, that person knows that they're appreciated right when they start the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was talking to someone recently and I can't remember who. I'm going to have to go back and find out so that you can post this person's name in the show notes. I'd appreciate that. But I was talking to them and they said they had the mentality that people that are doing the hiring, that are doing the leading, they need to have the mindset and mentality that the people that are working for them, working on their team, working under them, you're working for them. They are your customers, and you need to come in with the mindset every day that you need to do everything in your power to create the value for them to continue to want to walk in the door every day and provide revenue for your organization, to do something that is providing revenue for your organization. They don't work for you, you work for them. They are your customer. And if you're not bringing that value every day, then you are failing as a leader.
You 100% agree. I think that is like a true, you know, if you can find somebody that's doing that in an organization, that's key leadership role, that person is a real leader. And it is extremely hard to do because you do get like, you know, I mean, things happen like every day and you kind of get desensitized to things, but I just love that so much. I think that's, you know, it builds camaraderie, it builds community. People want to come somewhere where they belong. People want to come work somewhere where they belong. Mm-hmm. They want to come to their own community every day.
They want to feel valued. They want to feel appreciated. They want to feel rewarded. They want to feel acknowledged. They want to feel heard. And they want to feel like they're making a difference, like they're contributing. And it's the leader's job to make them feel that as much as they can, if not every single day.
Yeah, no, exactly. I wish there was an easy way to get everyone on that train. I wish there was an easy way to really impress upon the fact that, you know, we are going to have a bunch of openings very soon. We are losing talent. You know, what are we going to do? Are we going to stick our heads in the sand and go on, or are we going to?
Well, some companies are going to do it right, and those companies are going to win, and some companies aren't, and they're going to continue to have the old mindset and the old ways of doing things, and those companies aren't going to be around. And then it's going to get easier for the companies that are doing it right to hire. There, we solved the problem. This is
easy. It's an evolution problem, maybe. It's just a natural selection.
Natural selection. Hey, I've heard stranger theories.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. Well, before we go, I have one last question for you, Travis.
Hit me with it.
I've got to know, you know, when it comes to the future of work and technology, how do you think that the more that we kind of embrace technology for our workforce, the more that the better our talent acquisition strategies will be? How do you think that'll affect that? Talent acquisition, retention, all those cool things.
Yeah, I think you have to keep your eye on it. You have to experiment with it. You have to embrace it. You know, we've been in this business a long time, and plenty of people I talk to on a regular basis have been in it a lot longer. Every couple of years, something comes along that is going to kill the recruiting industry.
Oh, yeah.
I just told this story, and I hope this podcast doesn't come come out too close together because I'm going to sound like I just got these sound bites that I keep regurgitating. But, you know, first it was the fax machine was going to kill the industry because the ease with which a company could get a resume was, and then the ability to make long distance phone calls for cheaper was going to kill the recruiting industry. And then the internet was going to kill the recruiting industry, and then Career Builder, and then
job boards
are going to kill the recruiting industry. And now, AI. Now that's the thing. AI is going to kill the recruiting industry. Nah. The only thing that these things kill are the recruiters that don't embrace the technology.
Yeah.
And so how is it going to change the landscape of how we do business? I'm not positive yet, but it is. It's going to change it in some way. And so right now we're in the experimentation phase. We're in the dating phase. We're in the, let's figure out how we can be compatible together. And so we use it in our office, and there's going to be another technology in 5 years that's going to kill the recruiting industry. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm keeping my eye open for it. And when it comes, I'm going to look at it. I'm going to test it out. I'm going to play with it. I'm going to see how it works. I'm going to ask people much younger than I am to play with it because they're going to be better at it. They're going to be more malleable to it. They're going to be able to adapt to it better. And then I'm going to have them teach me how to use it. Because the landscape is always shifting, is always changing. If we kept doing things the same way we did 40 years ago, we'd have a rotary phone, a paper planner, and an ashtray on our desk.
Yeah, we would. Every single one of those things too.
Every right? single one of them. And
oh, the Rolodex. I still have a Rolodex though.
You have a physical Rolodex?
I do. It was a gift when I worked at the state of Kentucky.
Wow, you really, really do.
Keep a little bit of old school vibes.
Good Lord. All right. So anyway, it's going to shift. It's going to change. We're going to play. We're going to experiment. We're going to figure out what works. We're going to figure out what doesn't. And the only people that it's really going to have a negative impact on are the people unwilling to embrace change.
Absolutely. I agree. And there's a lot of cool recruiting tools that, like you're saying, you know, include AI.
Yeah.
It's part of their features.
Yeah, they all that's do, like, but so many.
Probably
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's probably another conversation for another podcast, but I will say, like, have you seen Seek Out? Have you checked that out?
I haven't. Seek Out? I haven't played with that one yet.
Yeah, so it's really cool. So it has like a diversity feature in it, but it aggregates resumes and LinkedIn profiles, you know, but you don't know, like, it's like blind hiring. So there's not like a name, like it scrapes LinkedIn profiles, but there's no picture or anything like that.
Okay.
And that's pretty cool.
I'd be curious to understand how that works with kind of what we were talking about earlier, where, so it sounds like this is searching to find you the best possible skill set.
Yes.
Based on what you're searching for.
Exactly.
How do you couple that with talking to the people so you can find the best possible EQ for your company, for your organization, the best culture enhancement, the most curious person, the biggest learner that you could possibly hire, the best rapport builder, the best salesperson versus the person who has the best scraped resume.
Yeah. But I think that you have like, there's like a messaging feature. So it messages that person. So you can still set up your screening calls and things like that.
Seek Out.
But that's like, yeah, but that's always something that I would assess in a screening call because I have a really hard time like discerning that from.
Mm-hmm.
A resume per se.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I'm like,
I'll have to check that one out. And I think a new skill set that we're still learning is how to best work with AI to be effective. You know, that's going to be a skill set, and somebody's going to be the best at it and somebody's going to be the worst at it. And where are we going to fall on the spectrum?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then there's just different applications that can just make your, you know, I look at it. I mean, I'm very much like, bring it on. I'm ready for this, these things to do the things for me. I will learn the things so I don't have to do all the hard things, right?
Well, isn't that, isn't that so much of what industrial technology and automation is about, is do the things that I don't want to do. Do the things that are dirty, that are dangerous, that are hard and not fun, that are not creatively or emotionally stimulating, so that we can focus on everything that we don't want to do, so we can be best at doing what we do want to do. And that's so much of what technology is about. So long as we embrace it and we use that new freedom that we have to do great creative work that we're passionate about, and not an excuse to be as lazy as we possibly can to sink to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
If we do that, then AI and
Yeah, they're definitely going to overthrow us at some point. And just like, you know, if we just totally give up. But I do think that the potential to empower humanity is a lot greater with technology.
Yep, I agree. Yeah.
Love that. Well, Travis, for anybody in our audience today interested in reaching out to you, learning more about yourself or Miller Resource Group, what is a good point of contact?
MySpace.
Yeah. No. Still rocking that?
I wish I could still uncover my MySpace page and the curated playlists that I had there.
God, they were so good though.
HTML coding I had to do. No, I'm a recruiter. You find me on LinkedIn.
Can we get music on LinkedIn? That would be cool.
No, we can get games.
I saw that.
That's great. I love the new catch-up feature. This is fantastic. I can't wait to continue to scroll through that. But you find me on LinkedIn, MillerResourceGroup.com, MillerResource.com. We're there. And if you're ever at any technology show, A3, CSIA, Automate, IMTS, say hi.
Awesome. I love that. That's so cool. You're giving me MySpace nostalgia. All right, Travis. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time today. For everybody that is in the audience listening, reach out to Travis Miller at Miller Resource Group or Travis Miller on LinkedIn. I'll link all that in the show notes. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next time on Workforce 4.0. Thanks, Travis.